Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Welcome to the Disruption Zone, and today, one of my favorite people in politics is on with us. His name is Ryan Quarles. He's the Kentucky Agriculture Commissioner, and he is a down-to-earth farmer who is getting it done on a whole host of things in Kentucky agriculture-wise, but he recently wrote a piece that I thought was pretty awesome because it stood to the defense of Kentucky farmers and America's farmers nationwide. We've got this mini-mic, this Bloomberg national statist, this guy that wants to create this authoritarian, you can't have a 32-ounce drink, sort of state, Michael Bloomberg running for president. And some of the things he said in the past are now resurfacing, and he made some pretty disparaging remarks about farmers. And I've got Ag Commissioner Ryan Quarles with us. Ryan, first of all, welcome. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate you popping in with us.
Thanks for taking the risk of bringing me back on.
Yeah, it's a real risk. It's a real
risk. Professional risk, that's right.
You should see the hate I get, you know, when I have that ag commissioner on. It's like, you know, there's probably Joaquin Phoenix is going to target me on his Twitter now. I want to play some audio for you. This is Michael Bloomberg, who's running for president, and this is what he had to say about farmers.
Even people in this room, so no offense intended, to be a farmer. It's a process. You dig a hole, you put a seed in, you put dirt on top, add water, up comes the corn. Then we had 300, you could learn that. Then you have 300 years of the industrial society. You put the piece of metal on the lathe, you turn the crank and the direction of the arrow, and you can have a job. And we created a lot of jobs. 1.98% of the world worked in agriculture today. It's 2% in the United States. Now comes the information economy. And the information economy is fundamentally different because it's built around replacing people with technology, and the skill sets that you have to learn are how to think and analyze. And that is a whole degree level different. You have to have a different skill set. You have to have a lot more gray matter.
Pardon my French, but what a jackwagon.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that his debating skills were as easy as farming in his mind, but I think he's starting to realize that things are a little bit tougher when you actually get out there and do it yourself. Look, this is the same sort of attack that we've seen on Middle America from other celebrities, and like Joaquin Phoenix, I love the Joker. I love watching movies. I just don't like being lectured to by people that really don't know what they're talking about. And look, the farming community, we're the pride and soul of America. We're very proud people. We're risk takers every year. And a lot of folks just don't realize how tough of an occupation it is to put your sweat and livelihood into a crop, say a prayer, hope you have good weather, and then sell it, and then be demeaned by national talking heads, people who don't even know the difference between a soybean and a green bean. We can do better than this. And that's one reason why I wrote that op-ed, was just to say what everyone was thinking and right. Just say thank you. Thank you for what you do. And we just don't need to be lectured to by our celebrities.
Well, you have a guy in this case, and we'll talk about Joaquin Phoenix in a minute because he's a whole other level of dumb. But in terms of, you know, he's not going to be president of the United States. So,
no.
You know, Mike Bloomberg has bought himself a legitimate shot at being a contender. I don't think he wins by any means because of comments like this. And of course, also racist things that he said in the past and racist policies that he's enacted. So there's a whole lot of struggles for him, but these kinds of things coming out are sort of a microcosm of a bigger problem, and it's this, especially on the left wing in America, this disconnectedness from what real Americans do on an everyday basis. I mean, my grandfather was a farmer. He was a tobacco farmer. Until the day he died, they were growing, you know, all kinds of things in their little patch of land that they had in Waddy, Kentucky. And you know what? My grandfather never finished high school, never even really finished elementary school, but the dude was one of the smartest people I have ever known in my life.
Oh, yeah. You give a farmer a problem, give him some duct tape and baling twine, and he'll figure it out. He'll out-engineer people. that are sitting at a desk. I mean, I'm just, my hat's off to the American farmer every day. You have to be an expert in agronomy, vet sciences, a meteorologist, biotech, and of course, hey, you're your own CEO. People forget that farms are also businesses,
right,
and that you have to make sure you're making the bottom line. But I think you're right about this. It's not really an R versus D thing. We're having a rural urban divide, and it's being reflected in our elections. But it goes beyond just politics. Here in Kentucky, for the first time ever in 2012, more Kentuckians live in cities than they do out in rural Kentucky. And that, you know, we still consider ourselves a rural state, but sometimes we have to back up and remember that we are two or three generations removed from the family farm.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look back in the course of human history, it was always the societies that advanced their agriculture that went on to advance other areas of humanity, whether it be in the science, the arts, et cetera. And right now we're talking about efficiency that has never been seen before on this earth. You know, a little over 1% of the population provides all the food and fiber for the rest. And if you look back to Mao's China, Stalin's Russia, or what's going on right now in Venezuela, where the average citizen has lost over 20 pounds in weight because there's no food, people kind of get comfortable. They kind of take the farming community for granted.
Right.
And all we want to do is to do our job and not be criticized about it.
Well, you mentioned that things, you know, society is enlightened after agriculture was on the scene. It was because they were fed, and that was one of the top priorities in Maslow's hierarchy of needs that we all studied in college, and that was that you had to have your basic needs met: food, shelter, water. And once you have that, then you have time to sit around and actualize yourself, you know, start to think about things that lead to enlightenment, like art and mathematics and science and things like that. And it's interesting that you say that, because basically without farms, then guys like Michael Bloomberg wouldn't be able to grow their pointy head.
That's right. That's right. Or Joaquin Phoenix wouldn't have an acting opportunity,
right,
as well.
Because no one would care about movies if nobody could eat.
That's exactly right. If you take food out of society, I've done some research on this. If you take food out of society, all the laws that we pride ourselves on disappear in 3 days. When people get hungry,
yeah,
that's when they start looking out for themselves. And that's one reason why we have this stability in America. But we've also, I think, kind of lost touch about the basics.
Right.
You know, besides the Great Depression, besides the Civil War, it may be a handful of isolated incidents. We've never really have starved as a nation.
Right.
And if you go and talk to a World War II veteran on the European side, European front, ask them about the role of food when it came to piecing together the world after World War II with the Marshall Plan, literally airdropping resources. And that's one thing I try to do every day, just educate people about the basics. And you know, we're really science-based industry. We get technical real quick. But at the end of the day, it's about providing food and fiber and doing it safely and at an affordable rate.
Our soldiers won hearts and minds when they rolled into towns with tanks and were handing out Hershey bars. You know, I mean,
I was about to say the same thing, the power of the Hershey bar, world civilization.
Just something that brings us together. We come together, we talk over food. How many times have we said, hey, let's get lunch? How many deals have been made over lunch and dinner and so on and so forth? Before we move on to Joaquin Phoenix, though, because I want to hit what he said, because you wrote about both of these guys. Walk me through what a farmer needs to know, because according to Bloomberg, dig a hole, put a seed, water it. That's it.
That's right. And I was just personally insulted by the oversimplification of what he's talking about. You know, in a modern day, age of agriculture, someone has to have technical proficiency, if not mastery of the latest technology, including GPS technology. Hey, farmers have been using GPS since the mid-90s, long before Siri and Garmin showed up. They have to be an expert in agronomy and soil sciences. They need to know about efficiencies and spreadsheets and budgets. And hey, if you're in animal husbandry, you got to basically have really good knowledge of veterinarian issues to keep your livestock healthy and well in the production cycle. And then on the marketing side, you know, now more than ever, farmers are getting really aggressive with marketing their goods off the farm. And that might mean, instead of just growing the wheat or soybeans or corn, maybe you're turning that corn into ethanol. So it's a really different type, or bourbon. Let's say bourbon.
Right.
And so it's a really different type of production style. And long story short, farmers are some of the smartest people you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
And they're common sense, because at the end of the day, they have to put it all together. And I challenge anybody to get their hands dirty, you know, even have a garden this year and learn how difficult it is just to raise something in your backyard.
I've got the full extent of Bloomberg's knowledge of farming right here in front of me on this piece of paper. It's says Fort goes on the left. That's it. That's Fort goes on the left. So I guess
if I tell he's going to have difficulty in rural America, and then some of these other proposals by some of the presidential candidates, they have very little appreciation or knowledge of middle America.
Yeah.
And I think that's just kind of being very plain and blunt speaking. When your plan to revitalize America is the Green New Deal,
right,
and that's your stated plan for helping out rural areas, I mean, there's a very big disconnect. And,
yeah,
and look, sometimes we laugh about it, and you know, the methane from cattle, that one keeps coming up. And some,
I still have my whoopee cushion you gave me, my methane whoopee cushion you gave me, so that cow farts would destroy the planet.
That's right. That's right. Well, look, the latest study shows that all of animal agriculture, period, all of it, accounts for around 3%, just over 3% of all greenhouse gas emissions. And
I've seen that number too. Why the overreaction to it then? Why is it that Hollywood celebrities and politicians are attacking cows the way they're attacking them when it's only 3%? Because there's also some fake numbers out there.
Oh, there's lots of fake news out there. And in fact, we just try to provide the facts. You know, when agriculture tells its story, tells the truth, it's always a positive outcome. And people always come away with a better appreciation. But to answer your question, you know, there are groups out there that intentionally try to spread misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
There are activist groups out there that want to take away meat in society. And look, I always err on the side of the consumer when it comes to choice. Like if the consumer prefers lab grown meat, or if they prefer importing their water from another country instead of having bottled it here, at the end of the day, the consumer is going to vote with their wallet.
Right.
But it's not fair. It is not fair. And we will not stand up for misinformation. So like when it comes to fake meat in Kentucky, we passed a law that said, if you try to sell this stuff, you can call it anything you want. You just can't call it meat. The consumer deserves transparency.
Right.
And unfortunately, some of these environmental groups, I think, are trying to use food to advance their own policy. And we all get tangled up in the middle. And so we're constantly standing up for the farmer. And look, the food you find on your shelf at a grocery store is safe, reliable, and every other country on this earth is envious of the amount of food that's available to everyday consumers in America.
The number that I've heard about the cows, the reason why that number is inflated and everybody's freaking out is they include not just the cow itself and the farts that it has, and I know that's kind of funny to say, but also the transportation of the cow to and from the grocery store, you know, throughout the entire food chain, so to the slaughterhouse and the grocery store. What they fail to take into account is that if we stop doing that with cows, we still have to do that with lettuce. So they're including in that total, that 30% number that they're out there touting, all of the other elements of the food chain, which are identical to the other kinds of food, let alone the fact that the other kinds of food like soy, et cetera, clear-cut massive swaths of land. So in other words, it's completely false number, because they're lumping in things that would exist either way, whether you're transporting, you know, rutabagas to the
right
farmer's market, or you're transporting cows to the slaughterhouse. Either way, you're having to transport that stuff, and the cost is the same. So then when you take all of that out, you're down to that 3% number, which you gave, which is the actual amount of so-called effect in terms of methane gas that the cows contribute. That's so disingenuous.
Yeah, it is. And look, it's just one of those classic examples where you are entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own
right
set of facts. And we all need to be looking at the same spreadsheet here. And here's another thing. The amount of cattle in the United States is actually decreased over the years. We're actually more productive now than we ever have been before. The story of American agriculture, it's not just animal agriculture, but agriculture in general, is a story of efficiency and conservation. Our farmers are more conservation-oriented than ever, and we are doing things in an environmentally sound way. And the amount of cattle we have today was how many, roughly, about of bison, buffalo, there were on the plains back at their peak. And so, you know, historically speaking, we've replaced the bovine imprint from what bison was. And so it's just important for us to just have the facts when we're talking about this. And look, farmers want to be environmentally friendly because we want to be able to pass that farm down to the next generation. And we want to put that soil in better use and better health for the next generation to use.
All right, real quick, let me play a Joaquin Phoenix for you. Here's a fun one. Little sound bite from him. No, he's got to get to the podium here.
Hi. Thank you, Jane, for organizing this and inviting me, and thank you all for being here. I don't have anything prepared. People have spoken so intelligently and eloquently, but something I think isn't oftentimes talked about in the environmental movement or in the conversation about climate change is that the meat and dairy industry is the third leading cause of climate change. And I think sometimes we wonder what can we do in this fight against climate change. And there's something that you can do today, right now, and tomorrow by making a choice about what you consume. And I think that it's something that is doable. I struggle so much with what I can do at times. There are things that I can't avoid. I flew a plane out here today, or last night rather. But one thing that I can do is change my eating habits.
Okay, so he ate a vegetarian plate on the plane down to Washington, D.C. That's my favorite soundbite because it encapsulates everything that is wrong with Hollywood America today and how out of touch they are. First of all, he spouts that wrong statistic that's just totally fake. And it just doesn't even faze him that he flew a plane to an event that he didn't even have a speech prepared for. Like, if you're going to put that carbon in the atmosphere, at least prepare a damn speech, right?
Well, sadly, I've seen worse. But this is just another this is just another example. And look, I love him as an actor. I thought Joker was an amazing movie. But but you know, back in 100 years ago, the most famous person in America was Charlie Chaplin, and he was a silent film star. And I think our celebrities need to take a lesson from Charlie and remain silent when it comes to some of these issues. And look, I have nothing against people who choose different types of diets. You know what? Again, it goes back to the consumer. You're in charge of your own choices. And if you want to be a vegan, that's great. But there's room enough at the table for all sorts of agriculture. And to accuse our farmers of not treating animals correctly is just appalling, because it's just not true. You know, in California, where a lot of these folks reside, you know, their campaign is happy cows make happy milk. And it's true that the American farmer is at a point of efficiency where they know that good animal husbandry practices, which they already have in place and we lead the world on, is going to end up making for a better farming operation.
My last two houses that I owned backed up to cattle farms in Kentucky, and I never once saw a mistreated cow in those farms. I sat there and watched them. They just peacefully wandered through happy fields. In fact, one time we used to back up to the great R.J. Corman in Jessamine County.
Yes.
To his farm. And one time we literally backed right up to it, and one of his cow's calves was in trouble. And this is something I'll never forget about that man, because he was a great man and very much missed. My wife,
yes,
and I, we saw the cow struggling, the calf struggling. We called a friend of mine that was his sister. She calls him in about 20 minutes, or not even that long. It was like 10 minutes. He came out in a backhoe. He's wearing a tie with overalls over the tie. And he comes out and very tenderly helps pick up that cow or the calf, and then takes the calf and the cow back. And then they nursed it back to health. He was concerned about that calf's health. he was concerned about that cow being connected with its calf. There was a tenderness to it, because I watched it all happen from my back porch. There was a tenderness to it. There was not a nonchalance about it. He cared about every one of the animals he had on his farm. And I mean, that is a Kentucky farmer.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you made that reference, because the Kentucky farmer increasingly is changing. With 30%, a third of all of our farmers are females in Kentucky. And a lot of folks have farms on the side. So it doesn't matter if you're a full-time farmer or if you're a man like RJ Corman. You know, they care about the land and they have respect for the animals. There's a great picture floating around the internet right now of a farmer in the Midwest who's in a hot tub with a calf that they found that they needed some help. And
yeah, that's awesome.
Back to life. And he's just sitting there holding it like it's one of his own.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. So talk about a couple other things too that you've got going on. I know you met with Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell in D.C. yesterday. How did that go?
Very good. You know, we gave him updates on all sorts of things related to agriculture, but of course, hemp continues to be the most talked about issue outside of trade with a lot of these ag commissioners. And this is a great example of how if you bring a crop back from the dead, it can create economic opportunities. Now, we've got some struggles. There's some issues nationally that's occurring. You know, farmers are really good at producing. You give us an opportunity, we'll produce a lot, but we're still trying to mature the market a little bit. The meetings with our senators went well. We're focusing on issues such as the FDA and their need to get into this space and help us figure out a way forward on potential regulation of CBD products. But we expect to clear well over $100 million in retail sales originating from Kentucky.
Wow.
In 2019.
That's pretty impressive.
Now, there are some problems. There are some companies that overextended themselves financially, and unfortunately, they're going through some financial issues. But as a whole, the industry remains cautiously optimistic, but we still insist, hey, if you want to try hemp, it's legal again in America. If you want to try it, you have every chance to do so as long as you follow the program rules. But please acknowledge that there are issues with the market right now.
Well, let me just say a word about CBD, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I just started taking CBD. I started giving it to my dogs. I've got three rescue dogs. Two of them are approaching 16 years of age. And I was noticing some slowdown. And so I started giving the dogs CBD with their food, and from a Kentucky company. And within 2 weeks, I could see a massive difference in their energy levels and their digestive, in the lack of pain that they had moving around. And in one of the dog's case, literally, it's like I've got a puppy again. So I started taking it personally. And for the last 2 weeks, I've been taking it, and I have gotten the best, deepest, strongest sleep that I've had since I was a kid. I mean, it's unbelievable. It doesn't knock you out or make you drowsy. It's just whatever it does when it connects with your system and your body, when you go to sleep, you are asleep. And it has been unbelievable because it's increased my productivity during the daytime, my alertness.
Mm-hmm.
Dude,
mm-hmm.
This stuff is a miracle thing. And it's coming from hemp grown right in Kentucky. It's unbelievable.
That's right. You know, we hear stories like this every single day. And that's why now that it's legal again, we have to get the FDA to start looking at this and telling us exactly which way they're going to go. And look, all we're asking for is show us which way you're going to point the compass. And the bigger issue here is this, is that we think that CBD has tremendous benefits in society, whether it's for healthcare supplements, prescription strength type of products as well. But we need to have a cooperation with the regulators, because look, there may be potential feed quality issues of CBD. If that's true, it could change we do other industries such as chicken or even beef here in Kentucky. But we need to have the research. We need to have more data. But every single day we're hearing folks that come up to me and they say, Ryan, we started CBD. It's helping me with this, helping me with that. And we just need to know exactly in a medical way what exactly the benefits are CBD and the other 100 plus compounds
right
that are in hemp. A lot of folks focus on CBD, but you know, CBG is getting a lot of fanfare right now. But at the end of the day, we just need to have a better understanding of this. And if any state is going to benefit from this, we're going to make sure that it's Kentucky.
Well, you've been a tireless soldier for hemp since you came into office, as were your predecessors. Now Congressman Comer was big on that as well. And you guys have been, I don't know what percentage. Do we know what percentage of the economy it's building up to, or what it could potentially be in, say, 10 years or so?
No, that's the million-dollar question, literally. We don't know. If the FDA allows us to be, let's say, a healthcare supplement or even a food supplement, we're talking multi-billion-dollar markets.
Wow.
But again, a lot of our companies, they want to make sure they do things legally. They want to make sure they follow the rules. And so this is one of those instances where the lack of action from the FDA is really kind of preventing the market from developing. And look, I'm all about consumer protection. Don't get me wrong. They have a job to do to make sure they evaluate these products. But we're in year number 5 of CBD products being sold in America. Half a decade. We really need to have a conversation with them and say, look, just let us know which way you're going to go.
Well, the FDA the other day approved a drug, a new drug for lowering cholesterol that they literally, it's in the literature, they have no idea. There's no evidence that the drug actually does what it says it does, but they approved it. And yet they take this time when there's enormous evidence of the benefits of CBD and other extracts from hemp. And that, I don't understand that. To me, it feels like the pharmaceutical companies can buy whatever they want from the FDA, but the farmers of America can't get a fair hearing.
Yeah, and actually, I actually met with the brand new commissioner of the FDA, Commissioner Hahn, and he comes from MD Anderson, very talented individual. He spoke at USDA with Secretary Sonny Perdue and about 50 ag commissioners in the audience just 2 days ago, and he said that since taking office, one of the things he wants to work on immediately is getting the hemp situation under control.
Good. Hope so. Before I let you go, the last few times you and I have talked, we've been concerned about trade, but Trump seems to be making headway with China and other countries. Do we have some victories there to talk about for Kentucky farmers?
Oh, my goodness. We talk about how busy our trade negotiators have been. Look, phase one, China, multi-billion-dollar commitment from the Chinese to buy American agriculture goods. Unfortunately, the coronavirus is mitigating some of those effects in other areas of the economy. Japan, we have a new trade agreement with Japan that went into effect January 1st, but it's getting no press. A lot of folks don't know about this. The Japanese are affluent, 120 plus million consumers. They love American beef. They love American pork. And so that's a big win for U.S. agriculture. The United Kingdom leaving the EU, which means we have to have a new trade agreement with the UK, and you're going to see a lot of action from the Trump administration in the United Kingdom because they are big buyers of American agriculture. We're not just talking about food. We're talking about bourbon. We're talking about race horses from Kentucky, et cetera. The other big thing on trade right now is that you're going to see a big movement with getting in some of these African countries.
Yes.
They need food. They need technology to help feed their populations. And so you're going to see our team, when I say our team, the USDA being very aggressive in Africa. And so there's a lot of opportunities out there. But the biggest trade deal in U.S. history is the USMCA, which was just inked into law, a near tariff-free environment for Kentucky agriculture. So we know that Canada is the biggest export market for Kentucky goods, and this trade agreement is going to even strengthen that commitment.
Right. Fascinating. Hey, look, it's great talking to you. Thanks for the update. There's a lot of good news in all of this, and it's great talking with you, the Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles.
Thank you so much. Be sure to thank a farmer the next chance you get.
Absolutely. The best way you can thank a farmer is go to a farmer's market and buy some of their stuff.
That's right.
So but shop that outside ring at the grocery store. That's where all the farmers put their stuff. So listen, appreciate it. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks, Leland.
All right, lots more to come on the Disruption Zone this week, if I can learn to talk. I want to thank our co-executive producer and my sometimes co-host, Cameron Mills, and, of course, production help for the Disruption Zone provided by my friend Neil Kesterson at dxaudio.com, Dynamics Audio, for all your production needs. He is a terrific audio engineer. And whether you want to get old tapes cleaned up, something like that for, you know, you got found an old videotape or an old audio tape of family members. You want to get them all cleaned up to a major national production. He can do it all from A to Z. So appreciate him and his help with the production value on this program. We are on Instagram. It's at Greatly Londo on Instagram and at The Disruption Zone on Instagram. And on Twitter, it's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. The Disruption Zone was taken. It's silly. All right. The best thing you can do to help me is to forward this, share this, and get your friends to subscribe to the Disruption Zone podcast. It only amplifies our voice, and it's free. It's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are found, as well as at our website, www.thedisruptionzone.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.